Good evening, everyone. Welcome to episode 6-9er of Just Press Start here at justpressstart.net. As always, with me, my producer and my good friend Zessarox. Zess, say hi to everybody.
How you going? How you? I can't talk tonight. How you doing, everybody? Wow.
That's always a good start.
Yeah, that was.
Wow. And Zess, why don't you introduce your guest, and then I'll introduce my guest, and we'll move on.
All right. So my guest this evening made a cool, actually not just a cool, but an awesome puzzle game on Steam. He's also selling it off of his own website. That puzzle game, just describing it really quick, it's an open-ended puzzle game of fake chemistry. It's actually called Space Chem. I've sunk some hours into it. I know my Steam account might lie and say that I've only played it 20 hours, but I also have a copy of it on my school computer, and I can't even begin to tell you. I'll be sitting there, and it'll be my lunchtime, and I will just keep plugging away at trying to figure out the next puzzle. So, Zach Barth,
Hello.
Zachtronics Industries, maker of Space Chem. And he already said hello.
Yes, he did.
All right.
Hello.
And our other guest this evening from Spiderweb Software, it's Jeff Vogel, the maker of many, many role players, including the just recently released Avedon: The Black Fortress. Jeff, why don't you say hi to the kids?
Hello, pleased to meet you.
Likewise, absolutely likewise. So, Zess, you had some topics you wanted to go over tonight, as well as doing our regular interview type thing. So, why don't you?
I'm gonna hold on
Going to
to
hold off on
those.
that.
Yes, I'm gonna hold on. Not for the whole week. I might wait until a little later.
Okay.
So.
So, Jeff, I know we have a time crunch with you, so I'm going to ask you the typical normal interview type questions the first. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the newest game, a little bit about the company and your background, and then we'll skip all the regular interview questions and go to the interesting stuff after that. How's that sound?
Sure, that sounds great. So yeah, I'm the president and founder of Spiderweb Software. We released our first game in January of 1995, which feels starting to feel like a long time ago. We are an indie fantasy role-playing game, sort of low budget, old school, highly story intense games for Windows, Macintosh, and the iPad. And our newest game, Avedon: The Black Fortress, just became available on Steam. And yeah, it's Avedon: The Black Fortress. You know, it's sort of old school. You know, we're a small budget. Our budget, our we're a small company. Our budgets aren't huge. So, but what we lack in fancy graphics and sounds, we really try to make up for in cool, innovative, turn-based gameplay and neat, involved storylines.
Yeah, a lot of political intrigue and such in your titles as well.
Yeah, I love role-playing games that have an element of role-playing in the sense that you ask the player to make decisions that really impact the world and have a serious effect on how the game actually ends. And so my games tend to have a lot of intrigue, a lot of politics, a lot of people trying to get the players to do different things, and then giving you an actual choice who you think. Instead of handing the player a bad guy and saying, "Hunt this bad guy," I like to give the player a chance to decide who the bad guy is.
See, that's the kind of stuff that, again, just intrigues me. And again, I said it in the review, and I've said it a bunch of times. It reminded me so much of the original Pool of Radiance that even though there was a distinct bad guy in that one, just that feeling of you weren't completely just affecting the world, but you were a part of it as well, and things that were happening so far beyond you.
Yeah, Pool of Radiance was a great game.
Oh yeah, one of my all-time faves. Like I said, it brought me back to playing of Avedon brought me back to that happy place. So what is it about that old school style game that keeps you coming back? I was reading here on your blog, you know, you've been a big fan of games since the Apple II. So what was it about that style that kind of kept you? I mean, that kept you coming back and made you stay with? You know what I'm kind of what I'm asking?
Oh no, I understand completely. Why do I write games that look like that? A lot of it is, to be honest, it's what we have the capability of doing. I am not religiously against games that have really pretty graphics and good production values, but I have a sort of game that I like to write, and Lord knows nobody wants to pay me to write it for them. So I write these games, and I make them look the best and sound the best I can. And I will be the first to admit that, you know, they're indie low budget titles, but our games do require people to look past the graphics to a certain extent. But instead, what I do is I focus on the things that I love, you know, the cool tactical battles, the deep worlds, the storytelling, and that's what I focus on because, you know, writing words is cheap.
And more effective, though, in a lot of cases, too. I mean, that's...
Oh, sure, yeah, and there are people who really like that, and, you know, they're my base, they're my people. There are people who insist on really nice graphics, and there are people who don't. And my customers, the people who buy my games are going to be happy about the choice, are definitely going to be from Category B.
Mm-hmm. So, as I kind of alluded to a little bit ago, you've had some experience in the industry anyway, and you've also had some experience on the journalism side. So, where have you seen RPGs coming from, and where do you think they're going? Do you think they're heading in a good direction?
Well, in the indie area, God, role-playing games are going crazy. There's like 1,000 of them coming out. There have been a ton that come out. Pretty much any genre or subgenre of role-playing game has someone representing it. I mean, Dungeons of Dreadmore just did a whole bunch of business on Steam, and that's just a pretty straightforward roguelike. There's a lot of sorts of role-playing, and then there's Torchlight, for example. I don't have the names at my fingertips, but there are a lot of teams putting together role-playing games now. Deathspank is another one. In the mainstream, role-playing games, not so much these days. I mean, even BioWare sometimes seems a little disinterested in writing BioWare games anymore. For big AAA titles with millions of dollars in them, they're going to take them as close to action games as they possibly can because they perceive that that's where the money is. And, you know, when there's a demand for something like an old-school role-playing game that the big guys aren't fulfilling, that's where indies really shine. The great magic secret power of indie developers is the ability to fill niches that the big companies just don't want to bother with.
Yes, most definitely. Now, I don't want to leave Zach out, so Zess, why don't you...
All right. I was hoping you would take the reins there, Jeff. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Well, I want everybody to participate. You know, I'm an all-inclusive type of host.
So, as we mentioned before, Zach, you did the game Space Camp. My very first question that comes up is, where did you even come up with the idea for Space Camp? Well, how about this? First, maybe you should describe what Space Camp is, other than me just blathering on about saying it's an open-ended puzzle game.
It's a pretty good description. That's actually how we usually struggle to describe it. It's actually kind of a strange game. But we describe Space Camp as an open-ended design-based puzzle game. And in my mind, that's really the part that sets it, you know, apart from other games, is that a lot of puzzles will, you know, the designer will come up with a solution. They'll come up with a puzzle and a solution and then say, you know, kind of assemble it and give the player enough hints so they can figure it out. And that's where you have a lot of games like Limbo, where they are puzzles that were constructed to be solved in a specific or maybe a couple specific ways. And nothing against that, but that's how they work. Every puzzle in Space Camp, I constructed the puzzle having no idea if it was even solvable or what the solution is. So in my mind, that's a good way to describe that. So the basic game, it gives you a bunch of tools, and you assemble the tools, and you get new tools as you go on, and they're sort of abstract tools. But that's where the puzzles come from. And yeah. It's like you said, it's loosely themed to be about chemistry, kind of in space with a science fiction story. But it's definitely not an educational game.
Actually, it is.
Would you consider Age of Empires educational?
No.
Because I think it's educational in a similar way.
In a manner of speaking, I mean, certainly Age of Empires, you know, gives you an idea of the history and kind of makes you live that time period. So I can definitely see how it would be used as a tool.
Yeah. So I call it latently educational. You play it, you play it for fun, and you accidentally learn stuff.
Tangentially process. Educational.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. I was going
to
say
I will pay a great deal of money and go to a great deal of effort to keep anyone from ever describing my games as educational.
It is.
You might as well just put a big sign on the website saying, "Please don't buy my game."
Exactly. We had to be really careful and say this game is not about science. This is fake science.
Well, I hate to do this to you, but I am a middle school science teacher, mm-hmm. and I was trying to teach a bunch of my kids, you know, just basic bonding, not going mm-hmm. into, like, crazy high-tech stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I used your little puzzle creator that you have added on there, the research net as you call it. And I created a little puzzle where the kids had to make water, and it showed them how to bond things together and just, you know, the idea of what bonding is. And at a lower level, it's actually really good.
Thank you. We're trying to do, you know, not to say it's an educational game, like Jeff pointed out, but we're trying to push in to try to get it into more schools like that because, I mean, you know, joking aside, it really is, you know, it has a lot of opportunities for learning about programming and chemistry.
So my question is, and we didn't really get into it with that, and I asked it originally, where did the idea for that come from?
So I made a Flash game a while ago called The Codex of Alchemical Engineering. And it was a similar thing, but it was alchemy instead of actual chemistry. And it was far simpler, much smaller in scope. So
And harder.
And harder, yeah. Have you played it?
Yes, I played it.
Okay, yeah, it's definitely harder. Yeah, with Spacechem, we're like, we're going to take this game that's fun and actually make it approachable, which in hindsight, we Spacechem approachable, yeah. But, yes, we took that and then mixed it up with some ideas, you know, like a sort of cosmic horror story, like Cthulhu kind of thing, and just real stuff about chemistry and, you know, hard sci-fi. It just kind of happened.
Now, this is a really good question for both of you, and we kind of hear snippets here and there, but how is it to get, you know, your casual, open-ended puzzle game or your old school hardcore RPG game onto a platform like Steam?
Who wants to go first?
It's not easy.
I agree.
Avedon was rejected by Steam twice before they decided to accept it. Because there's a million indie games out there, and it's just one platform. And at the end of the day, they have to say no a lot. And in the end, we have a person who works with us on marketing, and I lucked into, he managed to get me a face-to-face meeting with the people at Steam, and I just, you know, came up with a really good pitch, including sales figures, to say, hey, you know, it's a low-budget turn-based role-playing game, but there is a demand for it. I mean, it's not a huge genre that's going to set the world on fire, but it is enough of a classic genre and it's got enough people in it that it's worth your time to put on the platform, and they responded to that, and I'm really grateful, because I've been advocating for indie developers for decades now, and I think Steam is one of the best things that's happened for indie game developers pretty much ever. It's an amazing thing.
Now, let me follow up with that question before Zach, before we get to you. The difference between you had an established base of how many games is it now? Nine or 12?
It's hard to keep track, but counting ground up rewrites of older games, we're probably around 15 games now.
Right. So I mean, so you had the pedigree, as it were. You had the following, and that you had the difficulty. So coming up with Spacechem and just bringing that, that's one of your first titles, correct? Like I said, besides the Flash game.
It's our first commercial title.
It was your first, right? So was that even more intimidating then to go to them as I hate to say this, I don't want to try and downplay, but as kind
of a nobody,
as an unknown quantity.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so we got before the game was out, we had a mostly finished project. We submitted it to Steam, and it just sort of never went anywhere, which I guess is like a de facto rejection. and we're like, screw it, we're going to make our own store, and we're going to sell it on there. You know, I had a lot of fans from my Flash games, even though they were free. I'd actually, you know, I mean, engineering games are equally niche, I would say. And so we built up a pretty hardcore following, and we just kind of pulled all of them and said, hey, here's a new game, it's way bigger, it's way better, but you have to buy it. And most of them were, I'd say almost everybody was okay with that. So we built a lot of sales off of that to get started. We started getting coverage specifically from Rock Paper Shotgun. Quentin Smith picked it up, actually, when the IGF submissions came out, he did a news post on it, on Rock Paper Shotgun, and then kept on following us, did a huge, really, really glowing review when we finally came out. The next day, we got contacted by Steam.
Awesome.
And then that happened, yeah.
So I guess that kind of leads me into my next question. So, and again, for either or both of you, the online communities of fans, it seems like, and Jeff, like I said, I read one of your recent blog posts, which kind of stirred up a little storm, quote unquote.
About how I never read forums?
Not that one. The one more about reviews and, you know, when to ignore certain things in a review because it's not actually saying anything. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. So when you have, like I said, you have your hardcore fans of something, but in these forums and everything, you always run into that type of person, you know, the nerd rage, negative about whatever. So as Jeff, in your case for Avedon, it was the regenerating health set people off. So Zach, did you run into anything like that too, where people just were hardcore against something and just were out to make your life miserable? Or
not quite like that. We have different problems. Space Chem, getting people to play a game that has chem, as in chemistry in the name. That's our hang up. We don't have a lot of hard, you know, we don't, you know, I guess the, it'd be different if we had a lot of games previously and then we broke with that, but like this, I don't know. No, we don't really have that problem.
We, there's a, over the years, a lot of people, have come to hate me. There are a lot of people on the internet that just despise me. And I think a lot of it is that role-playing games are an old genre and people have very specific opinions about what a role-playing game should be like. You know,
right.
There's a lot of religious issues. So, you know, I envy you guys for, you know, you write a puzzle game, and puzzle games are a genre, but it's a very diffuse genre, and I'm not sure that there's as many, you know, it really has to be this way, or you're a terrible designer sorts of issues.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's not like we're trying to compete with Bejeweled games, and we're saying, oh, this is the best new Bejeweled game. For a surprise.
You didn't match tiles! We hate you!
Exactly. So we never went out to say we were like that, so we never really had that problem. I mean, in a way, we call ourselves a puzzle game, but I think it's really a new genre, if you can even say what's a genre and what's not, because it's so far from something like what people now call puzzle games, like Bejeweled. Like, that's just totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the way to know when you've created a new genre is when you look at your bank account one day and see $30 million there. Like, you know, Notch, the guy who made Minecraft, he's like, well, you know, this is a great stacking block game, and oh my god, I have tens of millions of dollars. I just made a genre. And now there's tons of Minecraft clones out there, and just, you know, the word, that there exists, I can say Minecraft clone, and everyone knows what I mean.
Right. Means
that guy made a genre.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So, now, I know it's partially because, like you said, role-playing is such an older, established thing, but what is it, do you think, about the fans that makes them just so hardcore that there are people who are completely unwilling to bet? In fact, I'm sorry to drag this question out, but Jen and I were talking about this today, the fact that, as a rule, the Japanese will not play games like Oblivion or, you know, any of those series because they don't like the open-ended, and then there's so many people who hate JRPG style. So what is it about role-playing that makes people so rigid in terms of what they'll try or accept?
That's what humans are like. It's not a role-playing game thing. It's a human thing.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Like, way back in the day, there was this online discussion group called Usenet. It was basically like the first online discussion group. This is back in the late 80s. And they've opened an area on it about coffee. And I thought, oh, cool, I like coffee, I'll read this. It took literally minutes before it was open, before the first Starbucks Starbucks flame war started. Everything, you know, the internet is a gigantic argument machine. And anything that you, every mild preference becomes a holy war once you're on the internet. And that's just the way that people react to the thing. And that's why I largely don't read forums.
Right.
Because if someone writes on a forum post, you're really stupid for doing this, and you're a stupid, stupid head, it's impossible to not internalize that a little bit, because that's just how the human brain works.
Right.
You have to be very careful about who you let get into your head.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this article. I love this article. One that you wrote about this. You're definitely right.
Oh, yeah. I got quite a bit of attention for saying that.
Yeah, you're totally right, though.
It was funny. Good.
There are plenty of people. I love constructive criticism, and I welcome it, and I welcome people who will chew me out and say this sucks. But I pick those people. You know, they're in my beta testers. I have a lot of beta testers who are just constantly raking me over the coals for this or that. But I selected them, and it's I know who they are, and it's a limited – I limit the amount of input I get because otherwise you just get paralyzed.
Right. Oh, and just to show my age too, Jeff, just because we're about the same age, which side of the Mike versus Joel war were you on back in the day?
Joel.
Excellent choice. Okay, moving on.
What are you even talking about?
I have no idea what
you're
talking about.
It's a TV show called Mystery Science Theater 3000, I think. I mean, is there another Mike Joel thing? There might be. It's a big world. There's a lot of Mikes out there. So.
It's about 1993, 94, they switched actors on there, and that was one of the first massive flame wars that was ever started, was all this pent-up nerd rage about who was better, Mike or Joel. And it was an epic, people calling each other. I mean, it's what started kind of what the game facts boards look like now.
Yeah, and pent up nerd rage is the worst sort of nerd rage because that's coming out. You know, nerd rage doesn't stay pent. That it's getting pent down.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Just wow.
And that was also for Mr. Buckland, so once again, I could point out an old-timey reference, because he does seem to enjoy those.
Anyway.
I thought it was real quick, back to this point, and then we can move on to something else. Jeff, it was funny, because in the forum talking about that forum post, or that blog that you had written, by the end of the third page, people were calling each other names. And I was like, do you see? It's proving, you're proving right there. It's
Yeah, I'll tell you a secret. You know, when there was a big discussion about one of my forum, my blog is called The Bottom Feeder, if you want to Google it and read people being angry at me. In general, I rarely, when there's a long discussion about things, I rarely read more than 30 to 40 responses, because pretty much always below that, it's just people being angry.
Right. But you guys both made a point of saying, you know, you don't want to internalize. How do you do that? Because I know nobody likes constructive criticism, but, you know, I mean, I accept it and I learn from it. But how do you not internalize? When you read something like that, I know that's partially why you don't read forums anymore, Jeff, but how do you let that go?
I can't. Good reviews. The Rock Paper Shotgun Chaser.
There you go.
Well, even good reviews don't give me an emotional response anymore. At this point, the only feedback that actually creates feelings in me is bad feedback, which is why I'm very careful about where I go and what I read. You know, it's human. The brain just reacts in a visceral way to criticism. So you have to be careful about whose criticism you read and where it comes from.
Yep. So does the act of creating games still make you happy enough? I mean, do you still get enough of a reaction from that? Because otherwise, that's a kind of bleak existence.
Oh, God, I hate writing games. It's so...
Yeah, I second that. I don't do it because I have to. So I'm going to die inside.
You think I don't want to just, you know, stay in bed all morning and roll out and get a nice lunch and play video games all day and hang out with my kids? God, I don't want to write video games.
Okay, so I don't feel quite as bad when I sit there and go, oh, man, I have reviews I have to write.
You know, I've been doing this for 16 years. It's a job.
Right.
You know, it's a fulfilling job and a creative job in a lot of ways, and God knows it's all I'm suited to do anymore. But you know, it's work. It's painstaking work. Software development is.
And Zach, you agree with that?
Yeah, I haven't been doing it as long, but definitely. I mean, it's work. It's hard. You spend a lot of times really frustrated. And again, you're the visceral response. You're not going to be like, man, I'm so glad I'm really frustrated and completely stuck and worried about making money. Oh boy, no, it's terrifying and really frustrating. And then it's like a space chem puzzle. You're stuck and you're stuck and you're stuck. And then you figure it out. And then it's the best thing in the world. And then it's like, and that's how you know you're addicted to it.
Yeah, you know, I get all of that except for the thing where it feels good.
I was going to say, Zach just described how I feel when I play Space Chem now.
Exactly. That's why it's an acceptable game.
How can you solve it? Oh, that's how. Oh, wow. That's cool. You know.
So, Zess, I think this kind of ties into one of the discussion topics you wanted to bring up tonight.
It does?
About the volume that's available out there.
Yeah, this would be a good group to do it with.
Seems I think so.
Jeff is very vocal here about how he hates everything, which is
no. Wait, me? I do hate everything and everyone.
No, I have all sorts of hate, but it's all self-directed.
Oh.
Well, what I was mentioning, Jeff and I, off the show, and I was mentioning it for a while, and I really wanted to bring it up, and you guys seem the perfect two to bring it up, is lately, indie companies have been cropping up everywhere. Indie games have been cropping up everywhere. And, the big question is there starting to become too much? Are there too many games? Is there too much content coming out? I mean, you mentioned, Jeff, that you have thousands of RPGs to compete with.
Yeah, I have thousands of RPGs to compete with, but almost none of them are my sort of RPG.
That's okay. Very true.
I mean, if you're writing a game and you look out and you see that there's 500 versions of that game and a bunch of them are free, you have a problem. But, it's clear, looking at Space Chem on Steam, it's its own kind of game. There's not 5,000 Space Chem clones out there. So that's what gives you hope. That's what gives you a chance. If I wrote a roguelike now, or some sort of role-playing game where there's a lot of different sorts of it, like a Diablo clone, I'm going up against Torchlight. I'm going up against Deathspank. I got a problem. Instead, I write books with role-playing games wrapped around them. I write really heavy, very wordy, very plot-heavy games. There isn't a lot of that. That's how I survive.
So basically, in your opinion, there's not an overabundance? There's not too much?
It depends on the genre. I mean, video games are huge. Everyone loves video games now. I mean, so when you're marketing, the pool of customers is humanity, then there's a lot of room for stuff. Especially since a lot of games, they're sold for cheap. You play them for 2 or 3 hours, you discard them, and you move on to the next thing. There are areas that are very glutted.
Get out of my head.
If you write a Bejeweled clone, good luck to you, buddy.
Right.
But no, there's still a big market out there. There's still room if you pick something that hasn't been done to death already.
Okay. Zach, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we basically have a rule where if we're going to make a game, it has to be inventing something entirely new. And it's difficult, especially, Space Chem was really good at being not like anything else, but it was also really, not casual. It was, it was hard for people to get into. So, in the future, we're trying to push forward towards things that are more mainstream and more like normal games so people know what to expect. But, you still have the thing that if you want to be successful in what is actually, what is kind of a crowded market, you have to really stand out. So we definitely agree with that.
All right, so here's my really good follow-up question for that then.
Wait, whoa. You're praising yourself for your follow-up question?
Yes, I am.
Before you even ask it.
This follow-up question, this better not suck, because this
– It won't, because it's actually – it goes a little deeper into the industry.
I'm pushing back dinner for this follow-up question. So, man, just rock my world. Let's go. Let's do this. It's go time. Let's hear it.
Oh, good night. No, sorry.
Let's light this candle.
He's trying to put the pressure on it, but he's not. And
I'm still not hearing a follow-up question.
Wow, I'm being heckled by our guest. The question is, why are bigger companies not going towards more innovative and creative ways of delivering video games and sticking to that same old, same old, same old, when you're saying that as long as you're not being the same old, you end up making money? Hopefully I worded that right.
I understand. Why do AAA game makers make what they do?
Yeah.
Basically, why do they keep, doing the same recycled thing over and over and over again?
I've even got a follow-up to that follow-up, and why do people keep falling?
Let us answer.
Sorry.
I got an answer, but I can wait my turn.
Okay, you go first.
Okay, I saw a headline and subbar on The Escapist the other week that just sort of irritated me. It was like, why aren't people who produce AAA titles being more courageous in what they do? And I'm like, dude, if you spend $40 million to make a game, you're already being courageous.
Mm.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna. You know, you make when BioWare made Dragon Age, that was in development for years. That thing must have cost, I don't know the exact number, tens and tens of millions of dollars. I mean, if you're putting that much bread up, no one's going to take any risks because you're all going to lose your jobs.
That's true. And Zach, you had a point.
That's exactly how I see it. Definitely. I mean, that's the scale of them is so huge that if they made something really risky and it totally flopped because of the riskiness, because they misgauged how people would accept it. I mean, that could tank like a huge company. I mean, and then there are still some innovative things. I mean, look, Mirror's Edge. I mean, I've never played it because I get violently motion sick, so I can't. But it looks like a really experimental game with a huge budget.
We got murdered in the stores.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, and in reviews, everybody's like, oh, this is not what we were expecting from a AAA game. Boo! You know, I mean, it's...
I guess that's my follow-up, then. Again, why do... gamers are always clamoring. There's nothing new. Ooh, Call of Duty. You know,
they're full of crap.
Right!
Yeah,
it takes nothing to say something on the internet. Anybody with a computer and a keyboard can go post something on the internet and say it. And thus
sometimes
they do.
Innovation sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And not every innovation is successful.
Yeah, I will never I really try hard not to criticize other developers for what they do, because you know I have sympathy, and you know we're even though they're competitors, we're on the same team. I totally understand why, you know, what's the big BioWare Star Wars MMO that's coming up?
Old Republic.
Yeah, that's got like so many millions of dollars sunk into it. I don't think that's going to be a super innovative game, and I'm not going to hold it against them because holy crud, you know, just spending that much money on a game, there's your courage right there.
Do you think that's a difference that you've seen over the years? I said, you know, having been in the industry so long, that kind of the scale has changed so dramatically.
Well, the scale has certainly changed. I mean, the size of the team, because, you know, back in the day, because kids love hearing stories about what it was like back in the day, teams were small, because you didn't need 5 people to work on sounds, you didn't need 20 people to work on networking, you didn't need 30 people to work on your micropayment infrastructure or whatever. Every year, things get more complicated, you need more people on your team, therefore you need more money, therefore what you're able to do gets... what you'll have the courage to innovate with gets smaller and smaller because of the increasing overhead just to get your game on a shelf.
So would this be why we see much more innovation in the indie games and the indie developers than we do in AAA titles?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have a ton of innovation, but I do innovate. I do try new things. I wrote a game in ancient Britain. Speaking of the curse of educational games, I wrote a game set in ancient Britain where with Romans fighting Celts. And, you know, it did fine. It didn't set the world on fire, but I can do that because I'm just a guy in a basement. Yep. I don't have a big multi-billion-dollar public company staring over my shoulder going, yeah, we need this to make a lot of money.
Do you think, just based on the trends, do you think that the large companies, the AAA studios, will eventually bloat themselves almost out of existence and the indies will kind of become the de facto new sheriff in town?
No.
No.
No?
Transformers, Rise of the Fallen or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's like for the same reason Hollywood still makes money, even though their product is, shall we say, not always incredibly creative or good or anything. It's because, you know, there's always going to be a market for the big shiny things.
True, but is the difference, though, with film that there's really – yeah, there are independent studios, but they don't quite have the same distribution. With Steam and Direct-to-Drive and all those companies out there, I mean, is that the same kind of level as – you know, the multiplex versus the mom and pop movie house.
Well, even on Steam, you know, I got to go. You have to go toe to toe with the big things. I mean, Call of Duty is on Steam.
True.
If I'm on Steam, I got to compete. You know, there's some big stuff. There's plenty of big stuff. I got to compete with for visibility and whatnot.
I agree.
Oh, we lost Zest, but it seems like we got him back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Dog started going crazy, and we didn't need that blaring out our two fine guests.
But by the way, I do have to say, though, that follow-up, you know, that lived up to expectations. That was a fine follow-up.
Nice.
worth pushing back dinner for?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But Jeff, I think you have to run, right? It's
yeah, I got kids to take off to school, but they're not home yet, so I'm okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm okay for a while more.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get rid of you, certainly, because we're certainly enjoying the conversation.
No, I'm good.
So I mean, again, I'm trying to think of how to word this from the going back and forth as working in the journalism end of things. Well, you said you had your column for Computer Gaming World. What are the pros and cons of the industry? I mean, what do you think that the industry has the industry changed for the better?
Wow, you stunned him.
There's more good games out there than I could possibly have time to play. So the industry is working fine for me. Electronic Arts and Activision, on the other hand, have had lots of quarters recently where they've lost money. They're the two gigantic things. They're the two behemoths, and you know they can't make money. So I honestly don't know. I feel like there's lots and lots of really good stuff being really good creative stuff being created. I'm playing Trenched right now by Double Fine and enjoying the heck out of it.
It's not called Trenched anymore. It's called
Iron Brigade. Oh, those poor bastards. Getting blindsided by a trademark lawsuit from Portugal.
Wow.
It's the kind of thing that'll ruin your day.
Oh, yeah. That's poignant.
But they're releasing DLC to kind of make everyone happy again.
I'm happy. I'm happy that they're changing the title. I thought Trenched was just kind of an odd title. Iron Brigade is more generic, but it feels better to me as a title. I don't know. The
yeah,
Double kinda... Fine people are also smarter than me, so they made Psychonauts. They're awesome.
See, and Jeff just keeps gaining more and more points. I've been telling Zest for years that Psychonauts was the greatest thing ever.
Dude, I've played it.
I know. It took you long enough. Anyway, so Zach, hearing all of this about how the industry has changed and everything, do you wake up some mornings and just go, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Or do you...
Kind of. I mean, for different reasons, though. I mean, so I worked a normal job up until a couple months ago, where after having Space Chem done as well as it did, I was able to leave and do Zachtronics Industries full time. So I worry about those kind of things. So just so you know, because we have, you know, having employees now and like the more small scale business stuff. I mean, regardless of how the industry is shifting, free to play scares me a little bit.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
The free to play thing is crazy.
Okay. That's just taken
over the world.
All right. Yeah. You just stumbled into something, and now I got to push on it. All right, Zach.
Yeah. Go for it. Yeah.
Why is the free to play thing scary, Zach?
Okay. Oh, no, sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well...
Wow, Jeff, did you jump on that?
So I think it's scary simply because a lot of the way that the free-to-play games are monetized are through mechanics and things that are, you know, have thus far been adapted to more typical games where it's like, I'm just going to play this game to spend some time and kind of get sucked into it and tied around that. And I think about a game like Space Chem and how you would free-to-play Space Chem. I can't see that working in any way that is favorable. And if
you want to program your thing to go up, please pay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways to monetize things. I mean, you have stuff that, like, you make the game more annoying and then monetize away the annoyance by, like, with XP bonuses and stuff. And then you have content unlocks. There's lots of different things, and, you know, they range in terms of scariness. But and honestly, I think it's just scary because we haven't figured out how to work ourselves into that yet. But I don't think it's like the death of the industry. Some people get really upset about it. I'm just a little bit like, I don't know what to do with that yet.
Yeah, I think for free to play, I think that you have to bake that in from the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
If you like take your existing game and go, how am I going to free to play eyes this? That's not going to happen.
Yes.
Or not happen in a decent way. I want to just say, when I say it's crazy, I don't mean it's crazy in the sense of it's a terrible idea. It's crazy in the sense of I can't believe how quickly it took over the world.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying it's a bad free to play games are a bad thing, because the people make free to play games or make much more money than me. I just can't believe how quickly, you know, watching, you know, doing computer games and playing them and writing them for years and years and years, and this one marketing model just sweeps over everything in what feels like, you know, it's more than months, but it feels like months. It just blows me away. I can't believe it happened so decisively and so quickly.
I think the spread of it and how quick it passed on has more to do with a sign of the times and more like the economic trends amongst the world. Because, you know, when people see free, they think, oh my God, that's awesome. Let's give it a try. And people are more willing to go into it because they have nothing to lose but time. Wow, I was just poignant right there.
Wow.
Where did I come from?
I don't think it's a recession issue, to tell the truth. I mean, people always like free things. I don't care how good the economy is. People love free stuff. And when you have a free game, you know, there's no barrier to entry. You just sit down and start playing the game. You don't have to worry about spending money. You just start playing, and most of the free-to-play games will give you a satisfying play experience without you ever putting a bunch of quarters in the slot. So that's there's brilliance to that. It just sucks people in.
Yeah. World of Tanks.
God, yeah, that's it for me. You can buy the $40 awesome tank. I heard about that. I just did not think about that.
It's funny though, because one of my friends bought the $40 awesome tank, and you'd think that he bought the greatest thing in the world. And he's like, ha ha, I'm going to dominate at this game, and he gets totally wrecked every round.
How come? Other people have the $40 tank?
It's not because other people have the $40 tank. It's because he doesn't know how to play. he thought that, oh, if I pay, I win. And World of Tanks?
Not so much.
I'm writing the review on it, and World of Tanks? Not so much. Because if you have a bunch of people that have the free stuff, and they gang up on you, you're just as done as if a bunch of people with free stuff gang up on a free guy. So...
That's awesome. Yeah, so if you can, people, everyone can see that you're the jerk who bought the $40 tank.
Oh, look, this guy's got to spend.
Yeah.
Plus, in any well-defined free-to-play game, they're going to make sure that when you pay for an edge, it's going to be a small edge, like 3%, 4%, 5%, enough that you know that you've gotten an advantage, but not enough that you're gonna wipe the floor with people. No, nobody's going to want to play a game where you can play a lot, spend a lot of bread, and completely wipe the floor with people, apart from, I guess, Magic the Gathering. But, in a game like World of Tanks, they want to make sure that it's an edge, but that a skilled player can beat the person who spent the money. And that's been a plus, because if you play for free, and you're so badass that you can beat the guy who spent $40 for his mega robot tank or whatever, you feel great. You know you're awesome. And so in that case, the people who spend the money are a feature. They give you someone to show you're better than.
There was, on that note, though, there was a talk at GDC by the people who do Battlefield Heroes, and they were almost hinting at things to the contrary, that when you have, like, when the weapons actually do make you better so you can overcome skilled players, a lot of people say, oh, well, I need to be, I'm skilled, I should be beating them, I'm going to go ahead and buy the weapon. And then that convinces them for the upsell as well. It's almost more like an arms race.
Whatever it takes to get people to spend money.
Exactly.
Wow. I think what would be a danger for the free-to-play market is, I have a problem with the Wii Bucks or whatever they're called, and the Microsoft points and everything, because they're such odd amounts. You know, I'd rather spend $4.99 or something like that, or if I go on Steam, I am spending an actual monetary amount rather than some sort of nebulous thing where I have leftover. Yeah, Space Bucks, exactly, where I have stuff left over. So if I think that's something. I don't know if any free-to-play games have started doing that yet, where you have to buy their in-game currency, but that would scare me.
What's up? World of Tanks has their own in-game currency.
Ugh.
It makes sense. You don't really want people thinking about spending money.
True.
You want them to think about spending Space Bucks. They're like, I have no idea how much Space Bucks cost. You know, sure, I'll spend 1,000 of them.
And you want to reduce the barrier to entry. You want it to just basically be to get the mega tank, you just hit a button. And so, and having your in whatever currency is the best way to do that, because then the money is already spent, so they can just automatically give you the thing.
That is true.
Yeah.
I mean, God knows none of this is for the convenience of players. It's all for the convenience of the company that's selling the thing. I mean, the Microsoft points thing drives me crazy. I'm always having to do head math to figure out how many dollars is I'm spending on trenched or whatever.
And the best part, is that you can't buy them in the same increments that you can spend them.
Exactly.
And that's that. Then you see why.
That's why Microsoft is big.
Yes. Well, we were talking about that the other day, and we said we think that might be part of the reason why so much dreck, besides that, you know, there are really good games that show up on the Xbox Live indie marketplace there, but you have 80 points left over. You can't buy anything else, so all right, there's an Avatar cat massager. Okay, I'll buy that.
Avatar cat massager.
He's not lying.
Oh, I'm gonna write that game.
See, I knew somebody would. If I keep saying it often enough, someone will write it, and I'll say, "See, I was responsible for that."
You can buy this to massage your cats. Did you hear the? Did you hear the little vocal quotes I put around the word cat?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. That's perhaps not going to be used to massage a cat.
Yeah, I got gotcha.
Oh yeah.
See what he did there?
I've always had a little problem with people saying that indie games are just automatically this great, limitless font of creativity. And, you know, the indie games have as much ripping off and cowardice and you know, derivative titles, everything else. And if anyone doesn't believe me, just go look at Xbox Live indie games. And you will see, that is like the raw id of indie game development. Just look through that and just go through the insanity of the Xbox Live indie games. And there are some brilliant games on Xbox Live indie games. My God, I made a game with zombies in it. It's just brilliant. Avatar Drop is a huge amount of fun. But right now the three top selling on indie games is a Minecraft clone, a Minecraft clone, and a Minecraft clone.
Not anymore. Cute Things Dying Violently made it to number three.
I will buy a game called that. Buy a game called that. But it is a nice title. So,
it's a twisted game too. And I was going to say, now that we mentioned it, you have to buy it, or the developer of the game will come up here and beat us with wrenches.
Yeah, our last episode, Alex Jordan did threaten us with wrenches. But anyway,
you don't have to worry about that. Indie developers never leave the house.
Because they don't want to, or they can't afford to. I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Just pick your reason, really. I mean, it's a basement lifestyle.
Zach, is this true? Being that you are technically an indie developer,
I am literally right now in my basement.
No, Zach.
Oh, okay. We have a tiny office. I shuffle back and forth. I'm in the tiny office right now. It's my claim to fame. I moved out of I technically don't have a basement, so.
What, you dude, you're in an actual office?
Yeah, we have no windows. It's 160 square feet, completely windowless, inside of a building, just other offices on all sides.
Well, that's still awesome. That's you're like grown-ups now. You have office
space.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in my basement with like spiders the size of Yorkshire terriers.
Oh God, yeah, because you live in the Northwest, don't you?
Yeah, it's damp and there's spiders.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
So did we just discover the mystery of why it's spider web software?
Well, I've always had a thing for spiders. I had a tarantula for a long time. The way I picked my game company was like, oh my God, I want to release a shareware game. I need a name. I'll throw something together really fast. And then I've been living with it for 17 years now.
Moral of the story, kids, don't just choose a random name.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
I could have done worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you could have.
You guys want a fact? I wanted to, you know, we were coming to pick a real name that we were going to release Spacecom. And so my de facto name was Zachtronics Industries. But some of the other people on the team were like, well, it has your name in it. That's kind of, are you sure? So we tried to come up with a new name. And so my proposal was the Sphinxster, because we make puzzle games. And surprise, surprise, no one else thought it was good. And we're still called Zachtronics Industries. True story. Yeah, the logo would be like a little sphinx with like the Reddit disapproval face on it. You guys are familiar with that? Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of like looking at you. I can make the face right now, but you guys can't see. But yeah.
Yeah, I can also think of some derivatives on that name that I don't think you really want associated with your video game company.
Or maybe you do. I don't know.
I came up with a perfect name for an Xbox Live indie game the other night. Uh-oh. I was like going through like Try Not to Fart and Fart Pro and Fartorama on Xbox Live indie game, and I came up with, and this is for free. Anyone can have this. Don't poop in this bag. That's
the Avatar Cat Massaging Simulator.
80 Microsoft points. don't poop in this bag. I don't know what the game will be, but I'm sure that it'll write itself.
So Silver Dollar Games, if you're listening, there you go.
Silver. I want to meet the Silver Dollar Games people. They are my heroes. They're amazing.
Wow.
You see, it's like instead of writing one good game, just write 20 games and distribute the quality of one game among them.
Maybe I have to wonder about them and people of that ilk. Are they pawns, mindless pawns of some big conglomerate, Conhugeco that uses them as a tax write-off? Or do you think they're actually sitting there diligently every day trying to program software?
I think that they're just laughing all day, to tell the truth. I mean, the Silver Dollar Games, and if you're reading, you're listening to this, and you have access to Xbox Live Indie Games, play some Silver Dollar Games. They really are innovative, just in the sheer dumb fun of the thing. I have to say, I've tried every one of their demos. I've never bought one, but God knows they provided me plenty of fun. I have friends over the house. I'm like, guys, get this. There's a game on Xbox called Try Not to Fart. And that's a party right there.
It's lonely out in Seattle, isn't it, man?
It's rainy. We don't leave the house much.
You're busy trying not to fart.
And there's that, I guess. Yeah. Oh, God. Wow. Well, I think now that we've found the level of the room, we've probably come to the end of another episode of Just Press Start.
Well, we didn't get give them a chance to ask us questions.
Well, that's
true. That's okay.
You're right. Well, we can do that. Do you have questions for us?
Nope. I was just gonna plug myself one more time and then take my kids off to some school thing.
Please do.
I write. Retro fantasy role playing games. Good plot. Complicated game. Well. Cool game systems, really cool storylines, spiderwebsoftware.com.
And Abaddon, the Black Fortress is on Steam right now.
Abaddon, the Black Fortress is on Steam, only $10.
And more than worth it, definitely more than worth it. So,
well,
Jeff,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Have a good
night. Thank you. I had a great time. Signing out.
Great, thanks.
Bye.
Actually, I have one more really good question for Zach.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. There that is again about it being a really good question.
Yeah. You have Space Chem out, you have Zachtronics Industries, you got your little 160 square foot office. What's next? What are you doing next? Where are you going with things?
So we're working on some games, but nothing that I can talk about now. But I can tell you one thing that's coming out soon, hopefully, provided I don't totally screw it up. We're gonna have Space Chem on the iPad.
Cool.
So
really?
We have a lot of people who, yeah, they're playing Space Chem at home. They're like, oh crap, I have to go somewhere. I don't want to stop playing Space Chem. Well, now that problem is solved. Space Chem on the iPad, coming soon, hopefully.
Wow, you just gave me a reason I have to buy an iPad.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. If you have, it's like a giant iPhone. I mean, I got the iPad first and then the iPhone, and it's definitely like a giant iPhone that doesn't make phone calls, but it's
you put
cool.
Skype on it, and you can make phone calls.
Now, is there some slick way you can transfer saves from the PC version to the iPad version? Because that would be uber slick.
No.
Oh, well.
It's actually different. We had to cut out some things, like the boss battles. There's no boss battles on the mobile version.
Really?
Yeah, and some other stuff. It did not port over well. So.
Come on, those are some of the more frantic moments in that game.
But it's still going to be excellent on the iPad. Don't burst his
bubble.
Exactly,
because it's more the iPad is not, we found that it's not as good for the fast pace action-y parts going on. It's hard to control, but definitely all of ResearchNet is there, which in my mind for the people who are going to buy this is probably the big thing. Like the core, most of the core scenario campaign, and then all of ResearchNet is available on there. So it's 108 puzzles bonus as of a couple days ago.
Yeah, that ResearchNet, the officials, the official ones that you release.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I stopped having to play them back at like the second volume of them because I just can't.
There are some new ones that are easier. I've got some production puzzles on there now.
All right, I'm going to have to give up my fear of the word chem in the title because
it's not chemistry.
I know, but I organic chemistry was such a traumatic experience for me that I'm going to work my way up to it.
It's way easier than organic chemistry
because you make molecules that don't exist.
Exactly.
I used to do that in organic chemistry all the time. They didn't like that.
Well, the game likes it. Trust me.
Good.
Now, the other question that comes up, too, with Space Chem, are you going to do another expansion? Because you have 63 Covey or Corvi or however you say it.
Yeah, we did a Steam-only DLC pack. It was mostly for the summer promotion. I do not think we're going to do another one, just because we're trying to switch over to other stuff that's not Space Chem.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, Research Nets easy because I don't have to make the puzzles, but DLC is a lot of work. So, we also have physical copies of Space Chem for sale in a really sexy looking DVD case there on our store.
Nice.
And really cool box art.
Why don't you give people the website just in case they didn't pick up on it?
Yeah, so the Space Chem website, spacechemthegame.com. Go check it out. It has links to everything on it. Zachtronicsindustries.com has all of our stuff a little bit broader. That's our kind of blog. Some old game.
Yeah, go and try Alchemy or that.
Yeah, the Codex of Alchemical Engineering. Is there any electrical engineers out there? We have a game called Wreck Engineer 2, and it's all about reverse engineering electrical engineering circuits, and pretty cool. Steam Engine.
I haven't tried that one yet, but I remember in my physics
class. You should try them all.
I loved doing circuits, so.
Yeah, definitely check out Wreck Engineer. It has videos of me. Like live action videos, like Command and Conquer style.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Are you dressed up as Kane at some point?
No.
Oh.
No. Wow. You just like had that. To go. You had to go there, didn't you?
Well, you said Command and Conquer. I had to take a shot.
You trademark infringement dressing up like that.
That's true.
See.
I didn't say it was a good idea. I just wanted to know if it's something you'd tried.
I also can't grow the facial hair, you know?
That's a...
little tape on Kane beard.
Wow. And the other question that we didn't get a chance to ask you, Zach, but Jeff answered it. What are you playing right now? We found out he was playing Iron Brigade.
So game came out today, Red Orchestra 2.
I am downloading that as we speak, my friend.
I am a diehard Red Orchestra fan. I pre-ordered Red Orchestra. I don't think I've ever pre-ordered a game, but I pre-ordered Red Orchestra 2, and then we got it. We were playing it today in the office, and
nice.
That is a hard game.
Yes, it is.
I went through a couple rounds, like it was like real World War II. Never fired my gun once.
Right. Yeah.
Hold on. Were you French?
No.
I see myself the first time I start Red Orchestra 2. Zach, did you see Band of Brothers? I don't think Zest did.
I've never seen it.
There's a scene in the first episode where a guy's crawling through on his way to part of the battle, and he looks up for a second to ask directions, and he's shot in the head and killed. And I was like, that's me. That's going to be me.
That happened to me like 10 times in an hour. That is Red Orchestra in a nutshell. But fun.
And... they described the first game as gun porn, and they're saying this one is even more, especially because now they have tanks.
They had tanks in the first one.
Well, I mean that they went even. What I meant, they went into even more detail with the tanks this time. So
I think so. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I was playing, and somebody shot my tank in one of the wheels, and I could only turn left. And that's pretty cool.
So you're playing Red Orchestra. At one point, you and I are going to have to meet up then.
Okay.
Not do versus, but maybe co-op or something like that. That'd be cool. Definitely. And so what else do you play when you're not playing, when you're not working on your games?
Team Fortress 2. Kind of winding down that after playing it for like 2 years. You know, there's only so long that you can play TF2. Battlefield, probably going to play Battlefield 3 when that comes out.
I'm seeing a trend.
Yeah, it's weird too. I don't make any games anything like that. And then it's like, I need a game. I'm going to shoot some people.
Well, you know, it's a visceral thing. I can see that you make that you're it's a chance to kind of turn off and just
honestly,
do.
Programming games is like a puzzle game in itself. So
right,
yeah, definitely. Deus Ex, I played that. I beat that.
I haven't beaten it yet,
but it would be too spoilerific.
Yes, and
come back in a couple months, and then we can analyze Deus Ex without.
Yes, let's do that in a couple months, because if we spoiled the ending right now, Cry Valkyrie, Jen. On the podcast here would kill me. So
really? So how does it end?
Shut up.
I want to say something, but I'm not going to.
Wow. Zach, you feel exactly like I do when I want to talk to Jeff about Mass Effect 2, because he still hasn't beaten that yet.
What?
You've really got to...
You've not beaten Mass Effect 2 yet.
I have a 3-year-old child. and a lot of games to review.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
We're only two people, Zach. We're only two people.
Wow.
Oh, sorry. What? Yes, feel sorry for me because during my life of reviewing games, I don't have enough time to play,
play
more games.
Game.
Yeah, that boy, that sounded bad.
First world problems.
You know, it's tough. It's tough.
I'm just more ashamed that Mass Effect 2 is still on your pile of shame, Jeff. That's all.
Well, it came out like 2 years ago.
Well, I wanted to work through it, so by the time I finish it, the third one is out, and I can smoothly transition. I don't have to remember what happened. Exactly. I'll have just experienced it.
It's okay. I can relate it.
See?
I just played Assassin's Creed 2, like, a couple months ago.
See?
Yeah. Everybody else is like, oh, this new one's so cool. I'm like, wait, don't spoil it. I'm still on the 2.
Nice. Anywho.
So should we let this nice young man go back to his work?
Yes, yes, we should. I'm sorry.
Okay. Any more questions? Or?
Well, do you have anything for us?
Not really.
Not really.
Aw, poor guy.
What?
I said poor guy. He has nothing for us.
Well, you know, he probably knows far more about us now than he was ever hoping to know at this point. So, you know. But anyway, you have listened to episode 6-9 of Just Press Start here at justpressstart.net. I'd like to thank our guests, Jeff Vogel from Spiderweb Software and Zach Barth, Zachtronics Industries, maker of SpaceChem. So thank you both so much. Oh, Jeff isn't here anymore. So thanks, Jeff, for being here.
Thank you.
Wow, yeah, that was close. Yeah. And Zach, thank you so much for coming on the program. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely come back again.
Will do.
All right. So with that, Zess, you have any final parting thoughts for this evening?
Do I have any final parting thoughts?
Clearly no. All right.
No.
Well, in that case, good night, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
See you.